All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled. It is January 25th, 2023, Wednesday, 3:10 p.m. West Coast time.
Yes, it is.
Deborah, are you with me? How's it going?
It's going well. It's going just fine. The rain stopped on the west, at least on this part of the West Coast. Now we just have earthquakes in L.A. and...
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
4.2.
That's a decent size.
Yeah, I sure didn't feel it, but.
Yeah, I never lived through, when I was in California, I never lived through a big one, but I sure felt a lot of them. And a lot of the time, the ones that I felt were always in the middle of the night and they'd wake me up. Uh-huh. Or they would go into my dream and it would always seem like someone was like trying to kick the door in because the house would shake. But I never felt like a real huge one.
Yeah. Where was it? 1991?
89. Loma Prieta earthquake.
Yeah. Where were you at that time?
I was in Northwest Portland. Yeah. Packing my bags to come down to the East Bay to go to the World Series that didn't get to happen.
Yeah.
Because of that. And it's a bummer because it's the only it's the time that the A's won. And they swept the Giants 4-0. I hate my family has a deep hatred for the San Francisco Giants, and we loved the Oakland A's. And we had gone. I'd gone to the World Series, I think, the year before, and the A's had lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series. So I didn't get to see the good one. Saw the bad one, not the good one.
It's a shame.
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, I was in Louisiana. We were visiting Eric's family and saw it on the news. And, you know, of course, everything gets blown up on the news. So,
yeah, I wonder, was there any damage in Marin County?
There might have been. I don't recall. I mean, we had a couple things like a lamp fell over, a pole lamp fell over and something fell off some bookshelves. But that was it.
Yeah. Because I know the marina in San Francisco, well, the marina caught on fire.
Yeah.
And that's kind of close to the end of San Francisco by the Golden Gate Bridge. But I guess it didn't get hit any harder by the earthquake. It just, for some reason, caught on fire.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, it's nice here. Sun came out and there's actually some blue skies outside right now. I got off work early, so we're able to get this done. And guys, I hate to keep harping on it, but patreon.com/DeborahGetsRedPilled. Last Saturday, Deborah and I came out with our first exclusive content, which was our true crime episode, which covered a couple different things, but mostly the Moscow, Idaho mass murders with our new friends from True Crime Recaps. I thought it went pretty well, Deborah. What'd you think?
I did also. I caught myself like smiling when we're talking about murder.
Yeah.
So I felt kind of bad about that, but
yeah, I asked the question why women love murder so much. So but this weekend, we are doing another one. There'll be one a week. So this weekend, we will be doing our first movie review of the 1986, I don't know what, sci-fi action classic, The Wraith, with Charlie Sheen, Clint Howard, and many more semi-famous people that you'll recognize but not know their names. Those kind of actors, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good one. Have you watched it yet?
No, not yet.
I haven't either. I think I'm going to watch it Friday night and make some notes, take it all in, you know, just take everything in, take in the music, the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you're a fan of Dodge Daytonas, probably the crappiest muscle car of all time, you'll want to watch The Wraith, get in the Patreon and be able to participate and listen to our movie review. We'll give a shout out. We have one new subscriber, Dave, joined the George Soros tier. So thank you, Dave.
All right. Really, thank really you, appreciate Dave.
It. And I don't know if we should keep it a secret, but I sent you a message the other day that we have an extra special show with one of my favorite topics coming up with an extra special guest who has some new info on stuff that we love talking about. Should we reveal who it is or what it is, or should we keep it a secret?
I don't know. It could be a lead into one of my stories.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. I know where you're going with that. And they both seem pretty fake to me. but other than that, we should get into it. Would you like to present first, or would you like me to?
Well, I think I go first last time?
Who knows? Yeah, but it's good to go get in there with you. You know, I usually have some fun, lighthearted stuff.
All righty. Well, I do have some fun, lighthearted stuff. The last surviving member of the Apollo 11 crew, just at 93 years of age, just got married to his fourth or fifth wife.
So we are talking Buzz
Aldrin, 93-year-old Buzz.
Yeah, Buzz Aldrin is a American legend.
Yeah, the rootin' tootin'.
Yeah,
sock'em, knock'em.
Rock'em, sock'em.
Rock'em, sock'em.
That is a good hint on our upcoming guest.
Yes. So I would like to read just this one little brief article about his nuptials.
Okay. Well, right. let's first talk a little bit. His wife looks extremely attractive.
She's 63.
But she looks good for 63.
She looks 30.
Yeah.
She's from Romania. I don't
know. Is she? They have good Romanian.
No, she's been working with Buzz on he has his own website, which I'll talk a little bit about in a minute. But
I love Romanians. You know, there's Romanians at my church, and Romania is about 90% Orthodox Christian.
Do they all look quite youthful?
The ones at my church look like they've had a hard life.
Okay. This gal does not look like she's had
a hard life. It was a really hard place to live. And they got the communism real bad. And we listened to the Martyr Made podcast, The Anti-Humans.
Yeah.
Go listen to it, guys. If you haven't listened to it yet, I keep talking about it. But these the Romanian students, that is the most disturbing part of that whole show. Yeah. It's worse than anything you could ever imagine. But the Romanians at my church are very kind. They were very excited when they found out that the Orthodox Christian name that I am taking, you take a name of either a saint or an elder, someone who is probably going to be canonized as a saint in the future. And I picked this guy, Elder Cleopa, who was a Romanian monk and priest, and was a shepherd. So I chose him because of that. But he also lived through the communist times in Romania and actually hid in the woods for 10 years during all that stuff. And when that was announced at church, a lot of the Romanians were really excited and came up and told me about it. So
he's lucky. He's one of the few priests who were able to survive that.
So I was attracted to him for being a shepherd and for living through that. So but let's get into Buzz. Have the article pulled up, or are you going to read? Should I pull up some pictures of his wife?
If you'd like to.
I think so. Let's start going.
All right. In a small private ceremony held in the most... it just covered my article.
Oh, you're reading off of your...
I'm reading off my...
Okay.
All right. There we go. Now I got to scoot that over again. In a small private ceremony held in the most severely atrophied reaches of his mind, Apollo 11 astronaut Buzz Aldrin celebrated his 93rd birthday last week by marrying his longtime hallucination of a sexy space babe. The first time I laid eyes on her, in quotes, she was posing all sexy in a space bikini right outside a window of the lunar module. And from that moment on, I just couldn't resist.
This is a quote from Buzz?
It's in this article.
Okay.
Said the second man to walk on the moon, describing his new space wife's moon-dappled complexion, her silver-streaked hair like the tail of a comet, and her 8 humongous breasts. Let's just say we used to kick up a little moon dust from time to time down in those craters, if you catch my drift. She's 63,000 years old, but I'll be damned if she looks a day over 18. She really does look 18. I'm a pretty traditional guy, so before asking her for her hand in marriage, I traveled to the Andromeda Galaxy to seek the permission of her father, Emperor Kron the Merciless, who is the eternal ruler of a star cluster out that way. Aldrin went on to describe how in the decades since they first met, his hot space lady had transcended her corporal form and now mostly floated over his shoulder, telling him to punch people in the face. End article.
Okay. But so, he did marry a real woman.
He did. Her name is Dr. Anka Faur. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably not. And like we said, she's 63 years old, quite attractive. Oh, it's his fourth marriage. Just tidbits about Buzz. In good old Buzz, in 2019, two of his adult children drew a petition to seek guardianship of Buzz's affairs, alleging cognitive decline.
Yeah.
But they dropped it because Buzz had dropped a lawsuit regarding his money management and children and former manager. So they dropped theirs, so he dropped his.
Got it.
Yeah. He did disclose past struggles with alcoholism and depression.
Yeah, we see he's drunk quite a bit. He seems very drunk when he's talking.
I just in looking for stuff on him, there was a little video. He was at the airport, I forget where, trying to get on his flight. And there was some holdup at the counter, you know, where you check your bags.
Yeah.
And he was losing it. Just, it was a video. And he was like ranting and raving and losing
He hadn't even had to go through TSA yet.
No, but he was going to miss his flight because of something. And and his son-in-law works for Delta. So anyhow, he does have a website called, I forget what the website is called, but he has a nonprofit called the Human Spaceflight Institute. Mm-hmm. Which is a nonprofit focusing on utilizing a collaborative approach to advancing human spaceflight beyond low Earth orbit.
Yeah, because he knows that they can never go, they never went through lower Earth orbit.
Well, he's saying go beyond. So yeah, he'll.
Yeah, for once, maybe they can get it past the Tim Allen radiation belts.
Well, he also did say that. Why should we go back to the moon? It's desolate. It's not pretty. Let's go to Mars. It's much more earthling friendly.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard our best friend, Don Pettit of NASA say that, you know, it's a painful process to get back to the moon, but you know, he'd go back in a nanosecond, mm-hmm. but we need to, concentrate on Mars and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good excuse. And I didn't know this, NASA presented all the Apollo astronauts with a moon rock
mm-hmm.
to be donated to the museum of their choice. Buzz donated his to the California Science Center in LA. So if anybody's in LA, you should go check that out and report back to us. Three are on display at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, and one is at the Smithsonian that you're able to touch. You can touch that moon rock.
Can I get on here and share the screen and look up Anka?
Yeah, because I'm done with reading my thing.
Okay.
And recently, like as a couple of days ago, Buzz sold the jacket from the Apollo 11 mission that he wore on board the space flight. It's not, he wore a moon suit on the moon. So this didn't go onto the moon, but he did wear it on the way there and on the way back. And a unidentified person purchased it on July 26th, just this past July, for $2,772,500.
And that goes all to him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Here she is. Here's her and Buzz.
Right. That's the picture I saw of her, and she looks attractive in that one. Some of them.
Yeah, I guess, you know, your wedding day is kind of like the prom, even the chubby girls looked pretty good, you know.
Clean up a little bit.
Yeah. So here she is. Fourth wife. Hopefully this one lasts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
93. Yeah. Well, good old Buzz Aldrin, friend of the show, and good guy all around.
Good all around guy.
You know, one of those space rocks was presented to, I think it was either by Buzz Aldrin or by Neil Armstrong, was presented to some country, Sweden or Norway or something. And they did tests on it, and it was petrified wood.
Yeah, I remember we had that conversation. I didn't remember when I was looking at this, but I remember you telling me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we wish the newlyweds luck. Hopefully mm-hmm. they consummated their marriage, you know, like to be a fly on the wall for that.
Not me.
And I wonder how the reception went. I wonder if Buzz overdid it, you know?
Yeah, hopefully he stayed sober. Well, I don't know. It sounds like his alcohol days are maybe behind him. It didn't say that, but he said he struggled in the past with alcoholism.
Well, hey, I'll put this out there. I've been very open about my struggles with alcohol in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if Buzz would reach out, I would willingly sponsor him in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's very big of you.
Yeah.
We know he listens all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great first story to get us kicked off kick off this week. I don't think it'll get us kicked off because we're not on YouTube anymore. Okay. So, Deborah, are you familiar with Leanna Wen? Dr. Leanna Wen?
I don't believe so. You always come up with these.
Dr. Leanna Wen, you will probably know her when you see her. She is the doctor from somewhere in Boston. She is a... She showed up at the Boston bombing, which was very strange. But she is like on CNN all the time talking about COVID measures and what we need to do to keep everyone safe. You know, she's the one that was talking about like the vaccine as a carrot, using it as like a reward for people so that they could get to do stuff that they wanted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she's recently come out and said that like the numbers are being overcounted, and so here's her with your boy Chris Cuomo.
Yes, I do remember her. Yeah, I wouldn't recognize the name, but absolutely, yeah. I remember her.
So let's play this. This is her in I think in April of 2021. So let's play this.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's very important for people, right? The CDC director says vaccinated people shouldn't do it. Listen.
What we have seen is that we have surges after people start traveling. We saw it after July 4th. We saw it after Labor Day. We saw it after the Christmas holidays.
This is Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who is another just goblin. She's the CDC director talking about, and they're talking about, this is when they were talking about whether unvaccinated people should be allowed to fly. So,
90% of people are still unprotected and not yet vaccinated.
Right. But if you are vaccinated, what does the science tell you about how likely it is that you get sick when you travel and how likely you can give it to somebody else? Do they know? Do they know when they're playing scared? Do they not know so they're playing scared? Let's get through the facts on this and the science. Dr. Lena Nguyen, thank you for joining me once again, doctor. So the idea of, no, you still shouldn't travel even with the vaccine. Do you think that's the right call?
I do not. Look, I do understand the situation that the CDC is in. They want to be cautious, and I do have sympathy for.
Uh-oh, we got an ad.
So I look at her and I say, what are you?
We are, oh man. Okay, skip ad. Sorry about that, guys.
Dial it back, but I also think I do understand the situation that the CDC is in. They want to be cautious, and I do have sympathy for that. They don't want to overpromise initially and then have to dial it back. But I also think that there is a cost to saying things that don't meet the common sense test. Air travel, for example, alone is very low risk when everybody is wearing masks. And if somebody is vaccinated, that risk is lower still. The risk, actually, I would be concerned about unvaccinated people who are traveling, going on spring break, going to lots of bars and hanging out and spreading it to one another. I'm not concerned about the vaccinated grandparent who's traveling across the country just to spend time with their extended family. And I think that kind of nuance really needs to be spelled out, or else it's not going to make sense to people, not meet the reality test.
So you have messaging here being balanced with risk, because as you've laid out to me earlier today on the radio show, which is why it's so important for me to have you here tonight to echo it onto this audience, we're in a race, you say, and that people, we won't always have less supply than we do demand, that we're going to have to motivate people to want this vaccine, and it may not be as easy as people suspect. What do you believe that races, the variables are, and what the messaging should be?
My main concern is that we're not going to reach herd immunity because of vaccine hesitancy. And I know that's hard for a lot of people to believe who desperately want the vaccine.
So I'll pause it right there for a second. This is when they remember this. I mean, before all this stuff happened, herd immunity was always considered what would happen if enough people got sick and developed natural immunity, right? And then This is right when they started, they actually changed the definition of it in the dictionary to something to do with enough people being vaccinated.
Yeah, that's worked real well for them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing right now, and they're thinking, oh, well, it's just a small percentage of people who are actually anti-vaxxers. And that's true. There is the anti-science, anti-vaxxer contingent. But I think that there are many more people, millions of people, who, for whatever reason, have concerns about the vaccine, who just don't know what's in it for them. And we need to make it clear to them that the vaccine is the ticket back to pre-pandemic life. And the window to do that is really narrowing. I mean, you were mentioning, Chris, about how all these states are reopening. They're reopening at 100%. And we have a very narrow window to tie reopening policy to vaccination status. Because otherwise, if everything is reopened, then what's the carrot going to be? How are we going to incentivize people to actually get the vaccine? So that's why I think the CDC and the Biden administration needs to come out a lot bolder and say, if you're vaccinated, you can do all these things. Here are all these freedoms that you have. Because otherwise, people are going to go out and enjoy these freedoms anyway. And I fear a situation of coming into the fall where we never reach herd immunity. And then we get hit by the next surge of COVID.
Okay, that's enough. It's hard to watch. So she's talking, you know, you guys, we've all gone through this before, but she has changed her tune, Deborah. Okay. So she has recently released an article. She's also said that like her kids are like, I'm using this word, I think technically correctly, her kids are retarded. Like her kids are not progressing at the right rate because of being around people with masks and you know, online learning and all this stuff like that. She recently came out. I mean, just listening to her say that whole thing about like people enjoying freedoms without doing what they say, that's hard to listen to. But yeah. Here, she went on, and that was when Chris Cuomo, before he got fired for covering up his brother's sexual misconduct, governor of New York, you know, the whole sausage, Andrew Cuomo. Here she came on. She writes this article saying that COVID numbers have been overblown, that there's, you know, different categories. There's, you know, people that died with it and everything like that. So she came on and went on with your boy Don Lemon, E-Dog. She came on and went on with him on his morning show. So I think this is it right here. Let's see if we can get through it without a... Oh, come on. Okay, let's see here.
Looks like it's
going to go.
Yeah, it's loading up.
It says 33 states are showing increases of up to 50% or more deaths this week compared to last week. In a Washington Post op-ed, senior medical analyst and former Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Nguyen asks, are some of these Americans dying from COVID or with COVID? Dying from COVID or with COVID? That's the distinction. She goes on to say, two infectious disease experts I spoke with believe that the number of deaths attributed to COVID is far greater than the actual number of people dying from COVID. So let's bring Dr. Lena Nguyen in to talk about her op-ed. Doctor, thank you so much. Listen, I know that you don't want to, and we don't want to underplay the risk of COVID after 3 years. It is still a leading cause of death in this country. It's the story I just read about the number of deaths increasing. Can you explain, and infections, can you explain why you believe COVID deaths are being overcounted?
I think it's important for us to be intellectually honest in this case, and that includes recognizing that circumstances have changed. At the beginning of the pandemic, we had a situation where there were many people dying from COVID pneumonia, including healthy young people were dying because of severe shortness of breath, difficulty breathing. They were hospitalized because of it. Then, as a result of vaccines and as a result of a lot of people getting COVID and having some level of immunity to it, we're seeing far fewer cases of that kind of severe COVID and severe COVID pneumonia specifically. And yet, hospitals are still routinely testing everyone who's getting admitted for COVID. And so we're seeing many people who are hospitalized with COVID. And I think it's important to separate out who is being hospitalized because of it, because there are a lot of people who are still very concerned about their risk from COVID, and we need to give them the most accurate data possible so that they can better gauge their risks. And there are people who are still not resuming indoor dining or going to the gym or socializing. And I think we have to give them the most accurate reporting possible.
Just a quick follow. You're not suggesting that hospitals stop checking people, testing people for COVID if they come in.
That's right. I think that there's a better way to do this. And actually, one of the people that I interviewed was Shira Duran, who is an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. She and her colleagues came up with a different measure, which is using dexamethasone. So dexamethasone is a steroid that's used to treat cases of severe COVID. And she and her colleagues found that in cases of hospitalizations that do not involve dexamethasone, it's very unlikely that the primary cause is COVID. And so the state of Massachusetts actually turned to use this measure. So they're reporting both the total hospitalizations with COVID as well as the total hospitalizations with dexamethasone, which are the hospitalizations for which COVID is the primary cause. And they found that about 30% of the current hospitalizations are actually for COVID as opposed to 70% with COVID. So I think that's the kind of distinction that we need to be making that helps hospitals better gauge what's going on in their own system. And it allows people to understand their own risks a lot better, too.
Well, and also, Doctor, these are two separate things here, overcounting deaths and overcounting hospitalizations. As you know, I covered this closely being in the Trump White House when this happened. I talked to a lot of health officials about this who are actually kind of skeptical of this claim that you're making. And I think one big thing has been, what is the evidence that these COVID deaths are actually being overcounted?
Well, this is the reason why this kind of transparent reporting is going to be so important. There is a way for us to look at death certificates and also to look at the medical records of individuals prior to their death. And I think this needs to be separated into three categories. One is the COVID as a direct contributor, the primary cause of death. The second is, could it be a secondary contributing cause? So, for example, somebody with kidney disease, COVID then pushes them over the edge to have kidney failure. That's COVID as a contributing cause. And then the third is COVID as an incidental finding. So somebody coming in with a gunshot wound or a heart attack and they happen to test positive. I think that we need to separate out and look at the percentages of each. That percentage would have shifted over time as well. In the beginning, probably a lot more people were dying with the primary cause of COVID. That probably has shifted. And I think, again, we need to understand this. Another reason to understand this too is a lot of people are wondering when they should get a booster next. When do we need a second booster or another booster? And the only way we can know for sure is to understand who is getting severely ill and when.
But doesn't that change who should get boosters? Doesn't it depend on your age and your conditions that you have, preconditions, anything like that?
That's exactly right. And I think that's why we need to have this accurate accounting of who exactly is getting severely ill. If we find that the people who are getting severely ill are all individuals with certain underlying medical conditions, but not others, that allows us to better advise those individuals to take special precautions. By the way, none of this is to minimize the risk of COVID. There are still so many millions of Americans who are severely immunocompromised, who have chronic underlying medical conditions, who really desperately need better vaccines and better treatments. I'm saying that we need to have better data so as to focus our attention on these people who are truly vulnerable and allow others who have put their lives on hold to maybe resume a lot of things that that they might be too scared to do at the moment.
There is a new study, doctor, just emphasizing how at risk pregnant women and their babies are from COVID-19. I'm sure you saw it. I mean, they tracked 13.
Okay, so that's the end of the clip I have. If you listen to it from there, she goes on to say that, you know, pregnant women and babies should be vaccinated. But it's you know,
babies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So hold on. All right, Deborah, so there we have it. She has she's come out and told us that a lot of the COVID deaths are not truly COVID deaths. She's gone off the rails. She's written this article and she's become persona non grata to her base, which is, I guess she is a CNN analyst. You could see the expression of Don Lemon there. He was in shock the whole time. He does not want to hear this news. He doesn't want it to be over. He doesn't want people to get back to life in general. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, she makes an excellent point. We know that many of the COVID deaths were, you know, comorbidity or, you know, just like she said, you know, people come into the hospital from a gunshot wound. They happen to have COVID. So they list the cause of death as COVID.
Yeah. And do you remember a few months back when they were really making the push for the childhood vaccines, they were talking, they put out the talking point and it was all over the place that children were with COVID were the, like almost every child in the hospital had was COVID positive, you know, but it was just like kids coming in because they broke their arm, falling off the monkey bars and testing positive, you know, but they were in I forget who it was they asked, but it was just, there was a whole bunch of stuff like that. I remember when somebody died in a motorcycle accident and they asked, I forget who they asked about it, but they said, well, they probably got in the motorcycle crash because they had COVID. So that's so it should be a COVID death.
Yeah.
So
that makes perfect sense. Weren't hospitals, what's the word I'm looking for? Wasn't there like an incentive?
Yes.
Or was that just a rumor to, you know, each COVID death?
It was something like a COVID death got you $12,000 It's just so crazy to say. And then if the person had been ventilated, the hospital got 38,000, I think was the number, which I don't really understand how any of that hospital billing works, but that was, I don't have the clip, but that reminds me, I've heard it on No Agenda. I think OBDM played it too. Was this guy, this poor old man, not an old man, you know, guy probably my age, and his like 15-year-old son had just died from a heart condition, like a myocarditis heart attack type deal, you know, totally healthy, perfect 15-year-old teenage boy. And he said that FEMA called him. His guy's like at a press conference, like breaking down crying. And he says FEMA calls him and tells him, I don't know how, I never even knew FEMA was involved in any of this stuff. FEMA called him and told him that if he was to change his child's death certificate to COVID-19 and like retract the adverse effect claim that he'd put in, that they would be able to help him financially.
So
yeah, it's really bad. So that's Lena Wen. Sorry for the long clips, guys. But yeah, it's just it's out there. People are changing their tune. Lena Wen is not one of the good guys, but it's very strange that that kind of narrative is being allowed to come out.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, it is surprising.
So it's always fun to think about what's going on behind the scenes there. So that was that one. Do you want to present another story, Deborah?
Sure. This is a little more lighthearted, I guess.
Good. We like, I'll come in with the hard-hitting news and then you bring it back up.
Alrighty. Now, this was news to me, and maybe it's news to you as well. Bees in California are considered fish.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard this story.
A Sacramento appeals court ruled that some bumblebees can legally be considered fish under the California Endangered Species Act. The Center for Food Safety, the Xerces, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, Society for Invertebrate Conservation and Defenders of Wildlife say that native species and subspecies of birds, mammals, fish, amphibian, reptiles, and plants all have protection. But insects? No. So, the public interest groups that I just mentioned say bees fit the California Endangered Species Act, CESA, of definition of a fish. A wild fish, this is their definition, a wild fish, mollusk, crustacean, invertebrate, amphibian. And because bees are invertebrates, they should fall under the category of fish. Well, the Third District Court of Appeals ruled that bees do fit under that definition. And so now they can be protected by the Endangered Species Act. So far, there are four species of bumblebees that fall into that category. And I am not kidding. The crotch bumblebee.
Ooh, the crotch, yeah.
The Franklin bumblebee.
Oh, yeah.
The Suckley bumblebee. And the cuckoo bumblebee are all protected. So if you intentionally go to, you know, kill one of those four species of bees, of course, I don't know how any lay person would know which is which. I certainly wouldn't. You will get punished.
Yeah, if you're caught, you'll be punished, you know.
Because bees are fish.
Seems like a very strange way to have to go about protecting an insect, but who knows? Who knows what's behind it? Follow the money.
Well, they, you know, bees, you know, they do need some protection because they pollinate every, you know, spread the pollen all around.
They're pollinators.
We would be in worse shape than we are now if the bees were all to disappear.
Yeah, there's a woman named Miriam Hanane who's kind of in the conspiracy world, and she I think she just did a movie about how George Floyd died of fentanyl, but before she did that, she made a movie called The Vanishing of the Bees, which was, I think, a renowned movie about the bees. So, yeah. So I've considered getting bee boxes out here on my property. It's something I'd like to do. The guy I'm working for right now does it. A lot of people have them out here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because I consume a ton of wild honey.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know you consume it all local, which is the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I buy it by the gallon, 2 gallons at a time usually.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a good connection, and it's pretty great.
Yeah. So my other daughter suffers from allergies. As soon as she comes down, she lives in Washington, and as soon as she hits the Bay Area, she's sneezing and coughing, and she's really, really allergic. And somebody really smart told me, get some local, you know, Marin County honey and send it to her a few weeks ahead and tell her to eat a tablespoon a day. And when she gets down here, she'll be less sensitive to it all.
Yeah, if you eat wild honey before you go to bed, like a tablespoon of it before you go to bed, you're supposed to have good dreams too.
So. Sweet dreams. I wonder if that's where that came from.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, speaking of fish, I got a fishing rod. I'm so excited. And I talked to the kid that I'm working with, and he told me that the creek that runs through my property, that's right over there, about a 15-second walk from where I'm sitting right now, this time of year, I can catch steelhead in it, which are like huge trout. So I bought like a little trout rod. I need to go immediately and get another one, a bigger one. And I can fish for steelhead on my property. How awesome is that?
Have you ever seen anything swimming in there?
I haven't really checked it out. So,
yeah.
But I'm really, really excited.
Wow. How about a nice afternoon sitting on the bank of your creek?
Yeah. Hang out with my sheep live down there. I can just sit down there and fish. And I found steelhead are like the size of salmon. So you get like a salmon fishing rod. I found one in the garage, an old one that was left here by the guy. But it's like it's a nice one. It's like back in the time when stuff was still made in America.
Yeah.
And it had an old reel on it that wasn't working too good. So I ordered one off Amazon. It's coming soon. And I think I can use that for now. So yeah, I'm really, really excited. And
was the last time you went fishing?
Probably 1982. My dad took me to a trout farm once when I was a little kid, and that was about the only time. I can vividly remember being there though. I remember they had like the coin operated like gumball machines, you know, where you like put the coin in, you turn it, and all the little pellets come out.
Yeah, the fish
throw those
feed.
In. Yeah. So
there used to be a fishing place like that up in not Redwood, you know, the Tilden Park.
Yeah. I don't know if they probably still have it up there. Tilden Park's pretty cool. They used to have a gun range up there too, but it closed down. So did the archery range. Okay, so let's get into another one. Deborah, do you know who Sam Harris is?
That name is familiar.
Sam Harris is kind of this guy, and he was kind of part of this new atheist movement in like the 2010s. He hates religion. He hates Christians. He hates Muslims passionately. He gets away with talking about that because he is of another kind of religious dissent, that where you're allowed to talk badly about other religions, but people aren't allowed to talk badly about you. And, you know, he kind of got famous from going on Joe Rogan, And he's one of these guys like Neil deGrasse Tyson or Ben Shapiro that everybody thinks is just like super smart. But it's just because people told them that they're really smart. You know who really likes him is one of your husband's brothers who lives in Louisiana. I've had a
Oh, you had a conversation with him?
Yeah, at your daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
I talked to him. He really likes him. But he has been, and he goes on Joe Rogan and Bill Maher and talks about just a lot of stuff. A lot of people really like him. And he's just one of these college intellectual guys who, the older I get, and especially in the last 3 years, it's really shown me that all these people, they just get these reputations of being extremely brilliant or smart minds because people tell us that they are. And then if you listen to what they say, a lot of the time it's not very profound. And I think what this whole last 3 years has really shown me is that there are a lot of midwits out there. I'm talking people with IQs of like 95 to 110. And I think these people are the most dangerous people. And if you mix that with a boomer with an advanced degree or like a late Gen X person, I think these midwits don't have the ability to realize that they're wrong about things, or to like backtrack, or to like say like, oh, I missed the point on that one.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say some weird stuff right now. I believe that I am smarter than most people. I believe that I'm smart. And that means I believe I'm smarter than at least 50% of the population.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I truly would, Adam.
All that I think that does for me is that puts me above a midwit is that I'm serious, like midwit, like middle of the road, it's called a midwit. All that allows this elevated intelligence over being a midwit allows me to do is to realize that I'm wrong and to admit it.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what puts me in a different intelligence tier, because we see all these people who got everything wrong in the past 3 years continually just arguing and trying to make what they did, what they said, what they thought correct, spin it somehow to their being correct. And I think that like having an intelligence quotient of about 110 allows you to maybe go to college, memorize, certain minds might be able to memorize things really well, or to spin stories, or to like talk very, very well. A lot of word salad, like Jordan Peterson type word salad. This is what this guy Sam Harris does all the time too. It's using big words and, talking about books they read and making this case for how brilliant they are, when I don't think that they're anything special. But Sam Harris, despite like his hatred for religion and all this stuff like that, I mean, atheists are like the worst people to ever talk to. They're so annoying. He, on top of that, got COVID all wrong. He was wrong about everything. And recently, he is the one who came out recently. He got just Trump destroyed his brain and COVID ruined him. He just got it just wrecked him for some reason. He's the one that came out recently. I don't remember if we covered it on the show, but was saying that if Hunter Biden had dead children in the basement, it was still worth voting for Joe Biden,
God.
And he said this like openly on a podcast. And I've got a clip of him, and you watch when he talks, he's one of those guys. And I've noticed this thing that they do is people say, right, right. Uh-huh. And they're doing that because I feel like or say, are you following me? I feel like when people do that, it's like making you like be like, I have no clue. Like, I don't understand what you just said. And then they say, right, because you, it doesn't, if you say like, I don't know, it makes people feel like they're dumb, you know, and uh-huh. They think this guy is this intellectual giant. And like, he's saying, right. And you want to be like, oh yeah, I'm on the same page with this guy because he's so smart. He went to an Ivy League school. He's a professor. He hates God. He meditates, all this stuff like that. So we'll enable share screen, and we have some good stuff about with Sam Harris. And I will play the clip of him. And if anything stands, I'll probably pause it a couple times. But if you want me to pause or you want to jump in, you just say so, and I will. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so here he is. This clip came out pretty recently. It's all over the internet. This is him talking about what if he was right about COVID and we were all wrong. So let's go.
Take it back to COVID for a second. In one way, I mean, we got very lucky that COVID wasn't worse than it was, right? You know, it could have been much, much worse. It could
right.
have been 10 times as deadly or, you know, 50 times as deadly, and we would have lived through, or many of us wouldn't have lived through something truly awful. But had COVID been worse, you know, just enough worse to really get our attention, to really be undeniable, we would have had a different political conversation around it. There wouldn't have been the same kind of vaccine skepticism. Brett Weinstein would not have been released.
So Brett Weinstein is another one of these guys who got famous from Joe Rogan. He's the guy that he was the Evergreen State College professor who said like, oh, I'm not going to observe the like white people stay home from campus thing that they were forcing white people to do for like a day. And he's like a super lefty. And then he got canceled, like chased around the campus with a bat. And then by blue haired, you know, people from Olympia, Washington, college students. But they were all part of this stupid thing that like all these Joe Rogan guests that are just not impressive thinkers, but are on this, what I'm talking about. So it was like, and it was called the intellectual dark web. So it was like Brett Weinstein. He wants you to say Weinstein's because he doesn't want to be associated. Sam Harris, Ben Shapiro. They all have one thing in common. Barry Weiss, who's like this horrible New York Times columnist. She doesn't work for New York Times anymore, but who will advocate that Israel needed to bomb Palestinian hospitals because that was where the terrorists were hiding, stuff like that. But him and Brett Weinstein were friends, but they clashed on this because Brett Weinstein actually got it right. And he has a podcast called the Dark Horse Podcast, where all he talks about is COVID, really boring stuff, just reading studies and like breaking it down, but getting it right. So, and Sam Harris got it all wrong. So we'll keep going.
In 80 straight podcasts on the dangers of the vaccine, if a few variables were changed. I mean, just take that, leave COVID exactly as it is, but just make it preferentially dangerous to children rather than to old people, right? You just flip that around, the variable of age. If kids were dying by the hundreds of thousands from COVID at a rate of whatever it was, you know, 1%, say, but if it was pretty much all kids, we would have had a very different experience, right? And
right.
and the patience, right. there would right. have been no fucking patience for vaccine skepticism, mm-hmm. right? And everyone would have recognized that this is not my body, my choice.
Deborah, if there had been a couple different things different about World War II, if we could just change a couple different variables,
mm-hmm.
let's say Adolf Hitler loved the Jews and there was no Holocaust, and nobody died, then we wouldn't be arguing that Adolf Hitler was a terrible person. That's like the argument that he's making right now. He's just saying, what if the vaccine worked? And what if COVID killed millions of little children? Then I would have been right, is what he's saying. And he, you can tell he would prefer that. He wants that to be the case because that would make him right. Let's keep going. This goes on for another 5 minutes, 4 minutes.
This is, you're not going to kill my kids with your ignorance, right? And right. You change one other variable. What if the vaccines actually really did block transmission much better than they in fact did, right? And there was a moment where it was only rational to expect them to block transmission. Turns out they don't do it nearly as much as we would hope at this point. They just shorten the window by which, you know, during which transmission is possible. If they're even doing that now, I don't know. But let's say the vaccines really did block transmission, but then nothing else was, you know, all of the other mishigas about how, you know, untested they are and how dangerous they yet might be and the spike protein and blah, blah, blah. Leave all that in place. Just give me a little more transmission blockage and give me kids being preferentially killed or injured by this disease.
He wants you to give that to him.
It's
a lot of what ifs.
Of much of what would.
This guy is supposed to be some intellectual genius who's like, you know.
Is he famous for being an atheist or just famous because he's.
I think he is some sort of. He wrote a book in 2012. And he is famous for that book. I forget what his actual title is. Is he a neuro? He's like a brain doctor, I think, but not.
Oh, really?
I don't know what. You look him up. I'll keep talking. But look up Sam Harris profession. But he's a podcaster. He's famous for being an atheist. He was, you know, who Christopher Hitchens is.
I know the name.
He's a famous atheist. You know, he kind of rode that guy's coattails and became like the new, it was a movement called the New Atheists, and he was part of it. So, yeah. Doesn't this just seem wild?
Seems a little, I mean, that's a lot of what ifs. If unhinged. This happened and this happened.
Yeah.
Is he a neuroscientist philosopher?
Yeah. So yeah, that's the thing. I think if you go to college and like have 115 IQ and you go and you take philosophy, they will train you to be able to talk and to convince people of things and to like kind of be able to talk circles around a person who's not steeped in philosophy. But I don't think that that means you're intelligent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there's book smart, and I mean, that's smart, but there's also life smart.
Yeah. So let's go. We can cut this off. But
much of what was said about COVID at the time at which it was said, you know, the conspiracy thinking, the platforming of people who were obviously unwell and unbalanced professionally and mentally around vaccines. And their skepticism, the patience for that would have been non-existent, right? And so in some sense, we got unlucky at how benign this was and how mysterious it could yet seem. Because, you could run the argument: well, did he die from COVID or with COVID? He was 80 years old, right? That was the situation we were in. I'm saying that there are changes in the real world that could have happened and could yet happen that would have been immensely clarifying, right? And there would have been no less. I'm just asking questions routine would have not gotten anyone anywhere worth going, right? And that's I think part of what we're talking about here is, you know, with respect to Trump and with respect to COVID, are just contingent facts of these unique situations, which had they been a little bit different, we wouldn't have fragmented in the same way, right? You dial up the risk of COVID, or if COVID just had been, just made you physically ugly, right? Like if COVID was monkeypox, right? And you had pustules on your face,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's different than the hypothetical experience we all had of, yeah, is it a cold? Is it a flu? Is it COVID? Who knows?
Okay. That's enough of that. Do you get the point?
Yeah. What kind of popped up for me, he was talking about, just very briefly about Trump.
Yeah.
And that if, he was the one given all that crazy info about bleach cleaning the insides of us. And so, yeah, I don't think Trump had it all right, but you know me, I have it in for him.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Sam Harris knows whose vaccine he took, but he took Donald Trump. He took the MAGA jab. So, yeah. And that HCQ thing that you're still convinced that he said, it's not really, never really happened. I don't need to convince you that. I don't need to defend Donald Trump anymore. But yeah, there was nuance to that talk. Probably wasn't the most intelligent thing he said, but they hopped all over that, just like they did with all the other immigration stuff he said and stuff that wasn't true. So yeah, that's a leading American intellectual right there, having a mental break in front of our eyes on podcasts that are being replayed on Twitter. So yeah, I mean, that's my one takeaway from the last 3 years, is that, like, I guess that's kind of when I started feeling like a grown-up, because I'd be like, oh, like, nobody knows anything. Like, nobody knows what they're talking about. Some people do, but like, all these people that are propped up and said that they're experts and geniuses and brilliant, who just got destroyed and ruined by this thing that had like a 99.9999999% survivability rate. And like, it's just so crazy, and it's so wild to see it, other people online doing it. And because it's not, I spent time in Portland during it, it was pretty bad, but the people that I was around, it wasn't really a deal, even at work. The guys I worked with were 90% unveed and not, and like, pretty awake to like what was going on. So I don't know. Over the past few years, I've taken some really bad advice from people that I thought knew what they were talking about, financial advice, everything like that, advice on what to do when selling my old house, people telling me not to do it. And I lost a lot of money in crypto because I trusted people. And, it's good when you kind of wake up and realize that nobody really knows what they're talking about, and that you need to kind of figure stuff out on your own. And
yeah. Rely on your own research and
and gut instinct. No, like, people think that because Neil deGrasse Tyson's there or this guy's there, that there's, you can't trust your gut, and like, that's just being worked out of society. And I see these little kids, and it's sad for me to see that these kids aren't able to do things anymore. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to see.
It is.
A
lot of kids are really suffering. I mean, you said Lena Wen, was that her name? That her kids were really challenged by, having to stay home and do Zoom school.
Yeah. Yeah, my little niece is still wears a mask, And it's nothing to do with COVID. She just feels better about it. She like That's a hard thing for, I see it a lot. I see, that's the thing that makes me the saddest is when I see adults with children, whether they're teenagers or I saw two parents with their kid, little kid, like five, the adults unmasked and the little kid masked. And I think it's the parents' job to like tell these kids that they don't need to be scared anymore. But I also don't think that the parents are making those kids wear the mask. I think that little five-year-old kid is doing that on their own.
So we're raising a generation of frightened people.
Yeah. One thing that really stuck out to me when I was down in the Bay Area, I was talking with my nephew and I was getting into a little bit of conspiratorial stuff with him and like telling him to do his own research. And he said, but how am I supposed to know what is, I can't tell what a verifiable source is. And I think I remember hearing Monica Perez and Brad Binkley talking about this at school. Now they have like, they watch CNN in the morning. They'll play like little clips of it. And then they are educating kids on what is a reliable source to like look up stuff on the internet. And so it would be like New York Times, CNN, NPR, all this stuff like that. And they call it like verifiable source training, you know? So it's indoctrination and then making kids realize that like, oh, I can only trust things of that these people are telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know. So that's where we're at with that. You got anything else? That's Sam Harris, guys. Don't listen to anything he says. I remember listening to him on Joe Rogan and being like, oh, wow, this guy's so smart. I remember when I found out Emily's uncle was into him, I was like, oh, cool. And we had like something to talk about. Like I was on that train. That's kind of still when I was in my Joe Rogan phase and all that stuff. So when I was coming out of it and trying to figure out stuff on my own and thinking that these people are like these intellectual giants. And then you hear someone say this stuff like, what if everything was the opposite? Then I would have been right.
Yeah.
You know, and like trying to spin it and defend himself. There's this guy, Scott Adams, who was the worst on it the whole way through COVID and putting it out there on Twitter. He is the guy that made Dilbert, you know, that comic strip Dilbert.
Yeah.
He's like hated by the left because he came out and was like said that Trump was going to win. He didn't even endorse Trump, but he's like this real confrontational, like naysayer guy. And he got it all wrong, just like Sam Harris, and like argued forever and ever and ever. Like, oh, everyone who got it right because they're lucky. I got it wrong because I'm smart enough. Everybody that got it right is just dumb because they didn't read the data, and I'm so smart that I read the data and that's why I got it wrong. And like we heard the same thing with like Neil deGrasse Tyson saying like, oh, I read the data as a scientist, like, yeah, saying like, yeah.
That makes zero sense though.
Yeah, Scott Adams recently finally just came out and has been like, oh, I got it all wrong, but still doing it as like a total asshole, like about it. Like who should, since I got it all wrong and you guys got it all right, who should I trust? He's like putting these posts up on Twitter and people are like giving him names. And he's just like being like, well, how, he's doing it as an asshole. He's like, how did you know to trust them? Who don't you trust? Like just like over and over and over and over with people. Like, why do you trust their data? Like, it's just, it's so crazy. And I don't know. It's a different kind of mindset that these people who think that they're like superior and intelligently, like I'm smart enough. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm smart enough to know when I'm wrong. And I'm smart enough to know that I probably shouldn't tell people how to think, you know,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Or like I know that I'm not, that I should not be formulating policy for other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your mind is like a steel trap. You can remember so many dates and details and names that I'm constantly floored.
Yeah, but I can't find my keys or my wallet. Yeah. You would be able to if you just listen to, like, if you're in the echo chamber that I'm in and listen to the same stuff over and over and over and over again. So, but what do you got? You got any more?
Well, let's see. I wasn't going to share this one, but let's see.
Are we doing on time? You got to be out of here pretty quick.
Yeah. But this is, maybe I didn't keep it. Yeah, I didn't keep it. About the little girl who wanted the DNA test on her cookie that she left for Santa.
Oh, let's hear about it.
I can't find it.
Well, can you explain the story to us?
She sent a letter. I wish I had all this info because it's pretty funny. Give me 1 second to dig here because I might be able to. Okay, this is AP News. And a little girl.
That is a verifiable source.
a little girl in Rhode Island wrote a letter in pencil on her yellow lined school paper to ask the Rhode Island Department of Health if they could confirm. She wanted to know if Santa's DNA was on the cookie that had a bite missing. And they said they would be happy.
It's not the other cookie, because we know a lot of, we've heard these stories of these dudes that are in fraternities at various colleges throughout the country that do this thing with a cookie where they all stand in a circle and they put their DNA onto the cookie, if you know what I mean, together.
Ay, ay, ay.
And the last person that gets their DNA on the cookie has to eat it.
Boy, there's so many other things people could be doing with their free time. But
yeah, so if you know someone in a fraternity, they probably did that.
Oh, God, that's really horrific. But anyway, the Rhode Island Department of Health says it was not able to definitely confirm or refute the presence of Santa in her home. She had partially eaten cookie and a couple of not on carrot sticks. And the department tweeted on Monday that we all have something magical. We all agree that something magical may be at play. But they did not find any DNA matching any reindeer. That's it. That wasn't so good.
That's all right. So I guess we know that Santa Claus isn't a registered sex offender, isn't a felon, because they don't have anything on
file. They
don't
have his DNA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So not so interesting, but.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think the whole DNA thing is pretty wild. I think shows like CSI have really made people think that you can just go get easy DNA.
Yeah.
And, you know,
easy breezy.
You just take a blue light in there. You got that red haired guy. What's his name?
Oh yeah. I hate that guy.
You hate that guy?
I hate that guy. He's the way he talks.
Yeah. They'd be like,
all sort of monotone.
They found the body dead in the freezer. Talk about a body on ice. And then it goes like, and it plays the who are you. Yeah. They used to do that on the Opie and Anthony show. They would play those all the time. It was pretty funny.
You know what I noticed on crime shows, because you know I love crime, that whenever they're in the desert or the wilderness, the eagle screeches. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's to signify we're out there in the desert.
Yeah, they call those sky coyotes around here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good.
People view bald eagles out here as a nuisance. It's pretty wild.
Hmm.
So I think they're beautiful and to be revered.
Well, they are the symbol of the bird, right? The symbol of the USA.
Yeah. I think it's Tony Arterburn who talks about it, that the symbol was originally like a goose or a duck or something like that. And somebody changed it to an eagle. There's a lot of conspiratorial stuff about the eagle and the serpent and what an eagle actually means. I don't know. I have a gigantic bald eagle tattooed on my chest. But and I think I've heard some story that at some point a president wanted a little pit bull to be the national animal, which I would prefer. I love little pit bulls. So
what is the national animal? The bear? No, that's California.
No, the bald eagle.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was just the bird specification or if there was a separate mammal.
Yeah. Well, Deborah, I've got two stories left, and we'll burn through them real quick. Our good buddy Drew Missen from the Missing the Point podcast, and he's been a guest on our show a couple times. He sent me some stuff about that is going on down under in Australia, where he is from. And guys, if anyone wants to reach out and give us some fun news stories that they would like us to cover, then feel free. So let's see. It's in my emails. Oh, you know what? I've got a fun one that we could actually do real quick.
Ooh.
So it is reported that Nancy Pelosi had her daughter says that there was that she got a Catholic priest to come to her house to do an exorcism after Paul's incident with David DePap and the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's curious.
This is the Catholic News Agency and what they say about it. So after someone broke into her house and violently attacked her husband, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sought the services of a priest to perform an exorcism on the couple's San Francisco home, her daughter told the New York Times. So her daughter told the New York Times that there's an exorcism. I think that weighed really heavy on her soul. I think she felt really guilty. I think that really broke her, Pelosi's daughter, Alexandra Pelosi, told opinion columnist Maureen Dowd. Over Thanksgiving, she had priests coming, trying to have an exorcism of the house and having prayer services. Pelosi's office did not respond to CNA's, which is Catholic News Agency, request for comment by publication. According to the exorcist for the Archdiocese of Washington, any priest can expel demons from a house. A priest can only conduct a solemn exorcism of a person with the direct permission of his bishop. So
they can go in and bless the house. I remember they did that on Amityville Horror.
Yeah, my church does it as well. If you want a priest to come to your house, you put your name on the list, and they will do everything they can to come out there. And I think I might do it because there's a priest who travels back and forth from Astoria to Portland, so you can probably hit me up on the way.
Yeah.
But so that is not true. And if we'll remember anything about Nancy Pelosi and her Catholicism, does anything come to mind to you?
No.
Well, she was excommunicated, which probably means something different than you think. From excommunication just means that you are barred from taking communion by the church. It doesn't mean that you're kicked out.
Okay.
So she was excommunicated, as was Joe Biden, because of their stance on abortion.
Oh, right.
Huh. Yeah. So I wonder if she's... And our at my catechism class, like that was explained to us. And sometimes you'll go to confession because something's weighing really heavily on your soul, and you'll tell the priest, and they'll say, okay, well, you know, you need to repent for what you've done. Here's your penance, and don't take communion for 3 weeks. And that's like really affects people. Like people really want to take communion.
And they feel protected. Is it
yes,
a protection thing?
Yeah. And all sorts of different things. And so he explained to us, like, the priest isn't excommunicating yourself and isn't excommunicating you. You've kind of excommunicated yourself, but you're given the chance to repent, make things right, and come back after a certain amount of time, which usually isn't very long, I don't think. And then I don't know what the basis would be to be like kicked out of the church. But so that was kind of a fun story, because her daughter told a lie, apparently, and or just embellished the truth. Who knows?
How did it come out that this was not accurate?
Well, it just said that because you don't perform
an exorcism on a house. Yeah.
Perform it on a possessed person who's possessed by Satan.
Yeah.
Or a demon or something.
So maybe she just got the terminology wrong.
Yeah. Or she embellished the story.
Yeah. Could be.
Or it didn't happen at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's see. I think I got this one in my email. And this is about our good buddy, Gil Bates. Okay, so this is from the Daily Mail, UK. Bill Gates has just come, he went on a trip to Australia. So Bill Gates warns Australia to prepare for the next pandemic, which could be man-made and far more brutal than COVID. So we all know how draconian the lockdowns were in Australia. Really, really bad. I really feel for the people, friends of the show that live there, Drew, the guys from Flatten the Herd podcast. Really great people. And I always thought Australians were really, really cool. And I couldn't believe that how subjugated they were during this time. You know, people that we know had to do things that they really didn't want to do, because there's no way around it. Like, I had a way to not have to do stuff here. And in Australia, it was much, much harder for them. And I feel for people. But okay. Tech billionaire Bill Gates has warned Australia to be ready for the next pandemic, which could be man-made and far more brutal. Wow, that's a funny headline. I didn't read which could be man-made. I wonder if that means like man-made in a lab, or like man-made like by terrorists, white nationalists. Mr. Gates told the Lowy Institute think tank in Sydney on Monday that political leaders need to set aside their differences and work together to prepare for the next virus. He called for greater global cooperation. What does that kind of sound like to you, Deborah?
One world.
This new format's really, really rubbing off on you. I'm glad you said exactly what I wanted you to. NWO, one world government. And so he calls for greater global cooperation, using the COVID-19 pandemic as an example of how countries could improve on their response if they work together. So with the pandemic, we were foolish not to have the tools, the practice, and global capacity to be on standby like we do with fire or earthquakes. Mr. Gates praised Australia's policies in helping to keep infection rates low before vaccines were rolled out. So they had horrible lockdowns. Remember, we saw a video of those giant labor riots. Yeah. We saw police just beating the shit out of young women. We saw people coming and taking pregnant women who are about to leave and go to get a ultrasound out of their houses because they'd made a Facebook post. And then we also saw a whole bunch of mercenary police forces that were not Australian enforcing lockdowns there. So some of the things that stand out are that Australia and about seven other countries did population scale diagnostics early on and had quarantine policies, he said. We also saw they had those quarantine camps where people had to go for 2 weeks. This meant you kept the level of infection low in that first year when there were no vaccines. The Microsoft founder turned philanthropist said a stable international order based on mutual political will is indeed in order to deal with future pandemics. The only thing that still hangs in the balance is will we have the global capacity, and at the regional and county levels, that would mean that when an infectious disease threat comes up, we act in a way that it doesn't go global, Mr. Gates said. Okay, so on and on and on. But we just want you to know, if you are in Australia, Bill Gates has his eyes on you. And unfortunately, you guys are kind of the testing ground for a lot of the world. You guys in Canada, it seems like. Wonder if it has anything to do with still being ruled by the crown, but who knows? It was so crazy when it happened. You know, I love Australians, you know, I love Rose Tattoo, my favorite band. I love Chopper Reed's books. You know, his movie is great with Eric Bana. I played rugby in college. You know, I always thought these Australians were Crocodile Dundee. And, you know, turned out they were like more Lena Wang. Mm-hmm. But so we've hit COVID pretty heavily on this episode. So sorry if that weighed heavy on anybody. You want to go out with what I view. Some people probably wouldn't view it this way, Deborah, but I do, as a white pill, a little bit of World Economic Forum Davos news.
Sure. Yeah. We haven't touched on that.
And it'll go along with my assessment of the midwits.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. This is from New York Post. Ex-CNN anchor Brian Stelter resurfaces in Davos to host disinformation panel. So we know our favorite little piggy, Brian Stelter, and he is looking even thicker. He looks even like more porky than he did. This guy's like 36 years old, Deborah.
He needs to get out of that office. And
yeah, he's not eating bugs, that's for sure. Did you see Al Gore at all?
No, at Davos. Man.
Al Gore did a presentation at Davos where he seemed as though he was imitating Alex Jones. He's unhinged. It's so crazy. God. And he's super fat. Yeah, he's really fat. He is not practicing what he's preaching. He is not a vegan, that is for sure. Well, maybe he is, because that is actually a very unhealthy diet. Maybe he's just eating French fries, bread, Oreos, and Starbursts or something like that, you know. I was an extremely unhealthy vegan, but I still did lose weight, but I did eat a ton of carbs, but I weighed 135 pounds. Okay, so let's see here. Canned CNN anchor Brian Stelter resurfaced in Davos on Tuesday to host a panel discussion on disinformation. So that's like the only thing he talks about is his show is reliable sources, when he is like the most unreliable source of all. His show sucked so bad that he got fired. The Stelter-led event was dubbed The Clear and Present Danger of Disinformation and featured appearances by several prominent figures, including New York Times publisher Arthur Sulzberger, European Commission Vice President Vera Jourova. Internews CNN, Internews CEO Gene Borgalt, and Representative Seth Moulton, a Democrat from Massachusetts. So why does that guy need to be at the World Economic Forum Davos Summit? Stelter, he mentioned his old job at the start of the panel, introducing himself to the crowd as formerly of CNN. So he's holding on to that title. The hour-long discussion in the Swiss resort town focused on how the public regulators and social media companies better collaborate to tackle disinformation as information pollution spreads at unprecedented speed and scale, according to the World Economic Forum's website. So then they show some Twitter posts of him. This is his tweet. The annual meeting in Davos is many things to many people. A town-wide networking party, an educational forum, a valuable stage for politicians, a lucrative advertising space for companies. I mean, that's crazy.
you know, Kristen Sinema was there.
Who is Kristen Sinema?
From Colorado.
I don't know her.
She's Republican. From okay. Colorado.
Yeah.
Who, she was against MacArthur for speaker. She was one of those
against,
holdouts.
She was against McCarthy. So she was one of like the Freedom Caucus people.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Just goes to show you. It's all a big game, all two wings of the same bird.
Ooh, that's a good photo.
Yeah, that's old Brian Stelzer. But I just thought that this was great, that everybody out there is all worried about Davos, thinking that they're going to rule, take over the world and make our lives miserable, which is what they want to do. But then you look at it, and Brian Stelter is leading hour-long symposiums there. And Brian Stelter, he is like some sort of instructor at Harvard now. And that's another white pill. It's like these institutions, Harvard is like the Sam Harris of intellect. Like, it has this name and cranks out all these people who are in power, and it's so revered and everything like that. But they got Brian Stelter teaching there now. Like, that to me, that's the white pill.
Uh-huh.
Is that these midwits aren't going to do shit. They can't. They're not smart enough. They're not smarter than us, Deborah. They're not. They just have the backing and the power of a bunch of fucking lizard people that want an agenda. And Brian Stelter is just this little, he looks like a big toe. And he's not impressive in any way. He couldn't keep his job at CNN. Like, he was getting sub 1 million views per episode of his show. And it's just, we're all worried about it. We're like, but Brian Stelter is
not
there.
The brightest bulb.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him. He's not going to subjugate me. I don't know. I might be getting this all wrong, but to me, when I see this, it just makes me, and what do you think he talked about for an hour about disinformation? You know, he probably talked about January 6th and dangerous conspiracy theories. They are so worried. Have you ever heard the mainstream media talk more about conspiracy theory than in the past year? You know,
never.
And like, looking back to what Sam Harris said, like, people that we all got called that, and I proudly call myself that. I think the earth's flat. I'm fine with being called a conspiracy theorist, but when it comes to stuff that matters and us being able to like look outside the box and not have this massive, I think these midwits, the appeal to authority goes along with that. And like, once you can get out of that, not have to, and realize that you're a smart person who is like, you know, one of God's creations, and that you have a brain that works, like, I don't know. It just makes me feel good and happy and superior to these people. These people who are supposed to be the rich elites. And I mean, look at this guy. This guy's not leading a good life. That's not the face of someone who's happy with their life. You know? Like, I make $20 an hour right now, and I'm very, very happy with the way it's going. I live in a house that is very small. I don't make very much money. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on in my life, but stuff's good. And it's like, yeah. this guy is just a prostitute, a slave, way worse than I am or will ever be, because he knows he needs to do exactly what they tell him to do, or he will be just as erased as the conspiracy theorists that he talks about that he wants to erase. So, you know, on that note, Deborah, do you have any final thoughts?
Just have faith in yourself.
Yeah. Trust your guts. Trust your little voice in your head. And I think a lot of these midwits don't have that voice in their head.
Uh-huh. So yeah. Yeah. Cause it's they're, I'm just grabbing my cord here. Cause I just saw that I might run out of juice. Yeah. They're listening to what everybody's telling them, and they're too busy flapping their own mouth. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, Deborah, this was a good show. I talked a little bit, too much maybe, but hopefully people enjoy it. Guys, if you're still listening and you find some interesting stuff, send it our way, whether it's on a Telegram or email or through Instagram or whatever like that. If you send me posts on Instagram, give me a little label or like a description of what it is. A lot of time people just send me stories and I don't end up looking at them. But if you like, send a little note with it, I'll read it and I'll check it out. So guys, on that note, get over into the Patreon. Go watch The Wraith. Yeah, it's going to be good. And then we got a good show coming up. And it'll probably yes. a good conspiracy show coming
yes,
up.
Yes, we do. Yes,
one of
we do.
One of the ones that we got that we broke Deborah with.
Yep.
One that, you know.
Yep.
That's my litmus test for people is like, and it's crazy because there's still conspiracy theorists who think that we went to the moon, you know? And I think it's a lot of the people who got really wrapped up in aliens and want aliens to be really, really true mm-hmm. that still believe that there's, yeah. But we will get into that more later. We wish Bart Sobrell the best. And like I said, that invitation is open, Bart, if you ever want to... you know, if you ever get sick and tired of being sick and tired, Bart, I am here for you. And, or not Bart, Buzz.
Yeah, and, I wondered. Yeah. Bart's doing fine.
Yeah, Bart's doing good. Fine. He's a little.
Buzz yeah, can Buzz, use a little direction.
Yeah, yeah. But guys, thanks for listening. If you're still tuned in, and we really appreciate it. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we will see you all later.
We
Deborah,
will
thank you. I love you very much.
Love you, Adam.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.